No Tomahawk missiles were still there, but I just read the other day that we were going to be sending some Patriot missiles. That to me, that doesn't make any sense for all the millions of reasons we talked about this before. Patriots aren't effective against drone swarms. They're really, 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 really expensive, and there's only a finite number of them. Does that make any sense whatsoever, considering where we are in this conflict?
Well, back to your comment a second ago about phase three, that also applies over here with the profits, and certainly it's going to make some profits for some people over here. Now, my understanding is that those Patriots didn't come from the United States. They came from Germany and from some other countries here with apparently some future promise that will backfill them at a much later date when they can actually be produced, which, of course, is a very slow process. And listen, none of it makes any sense militarily or politically or diplomatically. It only makes sense profit-wise. The war cannot be won by Ukraine. They can't even avoid losing, and it's playing out that way every day, especially in Pokrovsk. And you have Zelensky this morning still talking about how, no, everything's fine in Kupiansk and Pokrovsk. There's not that many Russians left, and we're destroying them every day. And yet you can just look at the map, and just the red grows by the day. And as of this morning, just before we came on air, there are reports now that the final cauldron has been closed in Pokrovsk, and the Russians in the north and in the south have linked up. And now then you've got somewhere between, who knows, 5 to 10,000 Ukraine soldiers now physically circled inside that in the Mirnograd area, because Pokrovsk has been about 90% taken already. Only the outskirts are out. By all impractical points, Pokrovsk has fallen today, and Zelensky is kind of like Hitler in the bunker, just pretending like everything's good. It's that bad.
Well, and piling on, I mean, we're already piling on a lot. Telegraph reported that nearly 100,000 Ukrainian men between the age of 18 to 22 have left Ukraine in the past 2 months alone. I think, first off, Daniel Davis, I didn't even realize there were that many of that age left in the country, given how many have died in the conflict. But that they are still fleeing the country is at that rate is amazing. I mean, Ukraine can't keep up militarily in terms of boots on the ground, regardless how much hardware might be laying around.
Now, there are three issues at stake here. Number one, that age group 18 to 22 had not been mobilized. They had been
Oh,
left
that's
untouched. So that's why, but then they were prevented from leaving. And that turned out to be a big problem with a lot of the European regimes. And they put pressure on Zelensky to open the borders and let them go. And then there was a flood, and that they went out because they don't want to be the next ones to pointlessly die in a war. So
okay.
you have this big loss. You also have up to, by some reports, a 500,000 deserters so far in this calendar year. 500,000 that have left the battlefield, on top of all of the casualties, which continue to pile up every day. And then the last point is that there now is just is not enough to even force mobilize to come close to matching all of those losses. So every day the manpower pool shrinks even further while the Russian side grows.
I appreciate you correcting the record. Here I was imposing U.S. draft eligibility age on Ukraine when, in fact, they didn't require 18-year-olds to sign up. I mean, it's a later eligibility age there, correct?
It is, yeah, and that's a choice that they made, probably not unwise, but now then they're trying to go into that. There was a lot of pressure inside Ukraine legislatively to open that up and to sacrifice yet another generation of men that they are desperately going to need if they want to have a chance to have a future.
Wow. Fair enough on that one. I noted that the Hamas has returned three more deceased IDF soldiers. That just happened, and according to the reporting I read on this, they have eight deceased hostages still believed to be inside Gaza. The ceasefire that was in place temporarily interrupted the other day, but apparently back in place. Is this progress we can hang our hat on, Daniel Davis? Or should we be optimistic about this? Or where are things? That's what we have you for.
Yeah, it's very tenuous at best, and it's tenuous on both sides of the line. It's tenuous because of the Hamas side. It's tenuous because of the Israeli side. I don't think either one of them really want it. I think that the only reason we have even a tenuous peace is because President Trump demands it and is willing to put pressure on both sides to get it done. How long that stays and how far that can go, because it's not without limit, because obviously if both of them have agency as well. There's many in Israel that the last thing that they want is any kind of a ceasefire. They want a military victory, and they are unhappy that they had to go down this route. And meanwhile, you would think that the Hamas side would be breathing a sigh of relief and would be thanking their lucky stars that they got one, because otherwise they're really the only other alternative is complete and utter destruction for them and thousands more of their innocent people. But they still seem to be pretty boisterous and not wanting to accommodate, not wanting to disarm, and just resisting really across the board. And I think that's part of the depravity of the Hamas side, that no matter what their actions are doing to their people, even given this opportunity to finally end the suffering, they still keep dragging their feet.
This screams parallels to be drawn with Ukraine and Russia, doesn't it? I mean, Zelensky doesn't want to give up any land. He refused to capitulate. He refused to give up. Is that a parallel? I mean, is Hamas the one that's being completely unrealistic here? I know the balance of power, militarily speaking, is with Israel. But as you always and regularly have pointed out, and I'll concede the point, it's a valid one. It's going to require the slaughter of a whole lot more people for Israel to roll over and complete what it perceives to be its military objective. But I get the sense that they could do it if they're willing to go down that road. So is it Hamas that's the unrealistic party here? Where are we?
Well, there are some similarities and there are some differences between the two. In the Russia-Ukraine war, it is just black and white. There's one side that can win and one side that can't. And the side that can't, on the Zelensky side, still keeps acting like he can. That's the distinction between the Hamas side, because they don't believe they can win. They just don't want to give in. Zelensky is still, as of today, still thinks that he can succeed and just is pretending like the things are not going bad on the battlefield. Maybe more on that in a second. But the issue for Hamas is they're simply unwilling to acknowledge reality. Yes, the Israeli side has the unequivocal and non-negotiable advance in capabilities militarily, and they can impose their will at a horrific cost that, God help us, if that actually gets imposed. But somehow, whether it's the Arab regime, whether it's the Trump administration, they're going to have to put some pressure on the Hamas side to finally just do the only thing they have. The only agency they have is to stop the killing of their people by laying down their arms and leaving. And I think it's going to take more internal pressure on either the Palestinian side or the Arab regimes that are in the area. I think it's going to take those to get it done.
Okay, and that was the next question I was going to ask you. Further or greater involvement by the surrounding countries, the Arab nations that are surrounded, that would benefit tremendously by peace in the region. I mean, that's kind of what the Abraham Accords were directed towards. Listen, yeah, you're different countries, you got different ideologies, you're different wings of a religious faction, but let's all play well together, and it'll inure to all of our benefits economically. So that makes sense for everybody. I mean, can't we just all get along? But then you have very, very ideologically wed folks who are like, no, I can't capitulate. I've been at war with these people, and my father and my grandfather, my father's father, father-in-law, I'm not going to give in, no more.
Listen, and there's plenty of grievances that are genuine and valid on the Palestinian side that need to be addressed, but you can't even start to address those until you get the killing stopped, until you get the war over with. And I think the Arab regimes are very focused on this, and I don't think that they have any confusion on this point at all. And they, I think, have been putting a lot of pressure, at least a fair amount. I don't know that they've gone all the way yet. But I think that they really need to, because they can't get to their objectives. They can't get to peace in the region. They can't get to the issues to take care of the Palestinian people and address their grievances until Hamas lays down their weapons. So I've got plenty of things to say about the IDF and things that they shouldn't have done. But right now, the long pole in the tent right now is the Hamas side.
Okay. And to that end, this exchange of the deceased and bringing back the remaining deceased Israeli folks, that's just phase one. I mean, that this period of time with this ceasefire was designed to bring about that reality. We seem to be very close to there being no more Israeli deceased held by Hamas. So once we get over that milestone, what's the next phase, Daniel Davis?
Yeah, the phase two is being negotiated. And that's always been I keep bringing that up every time President Trump talks about how he brought peace to the Middle East, because there hadn't been any peace brought to the Middle East so far. It's only been phase one, which is a ceasefire and a hostage exchange. And now, you know, deceased remains exchange, et cetera. All of the hard stuff has yet to be decided and even negotiated. So There is, you know, I'm not to the point yet where I'm willing to say, yeah, we're over the hump here. I mean, we're still way on the up, downside of the hump.
Yep. Phase three is profit, though, Daniel Davis. Never forget that. Now, moving over to, I hope you get that, the Ukraine-Russia situation. Thank you. Appreciate it.